Calling all small firm architects. It's time to tap into your full potential with Entree Architects Context and Clarity, where inspiration meets innovation. Hey, it's Mark R. LePage, founder of Entree Architect, and I'm inviting you to join my two favorite co-hosts, Jeff Eccles and Katie Kangas, as they bring together authors, experts, and thought leaders for electric conversations with entrepreneur architects around the globe. It's not just a podcast. It's a community where dreams meet action.
There is a simple equation there. And what for me, what that did, just doing that basic calculation, was it allowed me to compare what I had actually saved in my retirement accounts to what I thought a possible projected annual spend might be.
Artists are temperamental, so beautiful design is going to be a priority. When the job is done, we're going to actually need to live in the house, not live with the person who designed it. And so for me, the artistic skill, the architectural skill is most important. And so I would say like that would be 60% of it, if not more.
Gain insights to build a successful practice. Subscribe, engage, and let's redefine your future together. Join the Context and Clarity community, where every conversation adds to your blueprint for success. Hey, before we get started, I wanted to let you in on something super exciting. We are launching a new podcast network. It's called Gable Media. That's Gable like a roof, but leave off the E, G-A-B-L, Gable Media. This is something that I wanted to do for a very long time, and it's finally happening. I've invited my friend Demetrius Lynch from Spaces Podcast to join my team, and he's working hard developing and producing our very first new show. It's a new podcast about marketing, branding, and the power of telling your unique story as a small firm entrepreneur architect. It's hosted by my friend, architect marketing expert, Jeff Eccles of Echo Engagement. The Build Your Brand podcast is coming this March. Here's a little teaser just to give you a little taste of what we're working on.
So that's a good question. What does an architect do?
For a long time, I've wondered why some companies succeed and some don't. Why one can rise to be synonymous with an industry, while many of the most creative on the planet toil away in relative obscurity. I'm Jeff Eccles, and I invite you to join me for the Build Your Brand podcast. It's the podcast miniseries where I'll explore how the best brands in the world think differently and act differently on their way to becoming the best, and what you can learn from them, because no matter the size, the journey is the same. This season, I'll open the cowl and look inside Southwest Airlines to see what makes them tick and what architects can learn from an airline that started with a simple purpose that's grown into a cult-like dedication to what matters most.
Well, at first, the board wanted to upgrade and change the way they did things. They even voted to put some of these things in place, but Herb Kelleher overruled them. He knew that Southwest couldn't do the things they did. They couldn't give people the freedom to fly in the same way if they made these changes. He also knew the airline industry really well and knew that first class service with bargain basement prices wouldn't work.
When we started out, we said, we're going to have a special niche in the industry. And if we're going to make it a really distinctive niche, we have to do things innovatively. And so we did.
Now, I know what you're thinking. That's a really big company that does something completely different from what I do, and they've got a really big budget to boot. Here's a hint. Even if you don't have a $500 million marketing budget, some of the things that companies like Southwest Airlines do to rise to the top are both free and priceless. Join me in March as I start out on my Build Your Brand journey by exploring Southwest Airlines' origin story and uncovering the one simple idea that changed everything and allowed you to be, as Southwest puts it,
you are now free to move about the country.
So watch for Build Your Brand podcast launching in just a few weeks. My name is Mark R. LePage, and you are listening to Entree Architect Podcast, where each week I speak with inspiring, passionate people who share their knowledge and expertise, all to help you build a better business as a small firm entrepreneur architect. This is episode 310, Fighting for a Public Understanding of Why Good Architecture Matters, with Jessica Letaw of Building Matters Ann Arbor. This episode of Entree Architect Podcast is supported by our platform sponsors, ARCAD, the online resource delivering quality building material information, CAD details, BIM specifications, and so much more, all free at ARCAD.com. FreshBooks, the cloud-based accounting software that makes running your small firm easy, fast, and secure. Spend less time on accounting and more time doing the work you love. And Gusto, easy online payroll, benefits, and HR built for modern small businesses just like ours. Jessica Letaw, welcome to Entree Architect Podcast.
Thanks, Mark. It's great to be here.
Jessica is the executive director of Building Matters Ann Arbor, an organization based in Ann Arbor, Michigan, dedicated to exploration, education, and advocacy around a future for Ann Arbor that is more beautiful, diverse, equitable, and sustainable. Jessica is also the vice chair of Ann Arbor's Downtown Development Authority, a member of the Ann Arbor Ypsilanti Chamber of, I looked that up, so I get credit for that, Ypsilanti Chamber of Commerce Policy Committee, and the founder of the local housing advocacy group Ann Arbor YIMBY. That's with a Y. Yes, in my backyard, YIMBY, Y-I-M-B-Y. As opposed to NIMBY, this is YIMBY. And she's committed to community organizing around housing, affordability, and accessibility. Jessica believes that thriving community is one that works well for everyone. And I've learned a little bit about you, Jessica, and I really love what you're doing. And I really am looking forward to this conversation. So let's do that. But before we get into the discussion about Building Matters Ann Arbor and all the other things that you're doing, let's talk about you. Let's learn more about you and your origin story. Go back to as far as you want to go back. I like to sort of leave that up to you, to where you sort of discovered your passion for what you're doing today, and share that story and that journey to where you are today.
That's a great question. And every time I tell this story, I start in a different place, but it always ends up in the same place. So let's see what happens today.
Okay.
When I was nine, I knew I was going to be an architect when I grew up. I was a big doodler. I loved math. I felt like super strong on it. And then I proceeded to go to school and study German linguistics. So slightly different career
path. That's not architecture.
It was not. But on the tail end of it, I realized that I wanted to get back to it. So I went to graduate school for architecture. I'm originally from Georgia. My undergraduate degree is from the University of Georgia. But when I was applying for architecture programs, I knew that if I was going to do something so different, I wanted to do it in a different place. So I applied only to places where it snowed. And I got in most places. And when I got into the University of Michigan, I wasn't even totally sure, like on the map, where it was. So I came to visit the city before deciding whether to accept the position in the grad program, and I completely fell in love with Ann Arbor. The town itself was charming. The department was really exciting in the work that they were doing, and it felt like it was going to be the right step for me. So I relocated from Georgia to Michigan, studied architecture in the grad program here at the university, and I knew almost as soon as I moved up here that Ann Arbor was going to be my home for a long time. So shortly after I looked for shortly after I was done with school, I looked for a job that combined both communications and the architecture studies that I'd had, and ended up going to work for a local design build firm in their marketing and communications. that was fantastic. It was a great fit for me because it married what I did well and what I love to do, which was connect with people and connect people to the built environment. I loved my team. I loved my staff. I loved my work. And yet I left a couple of years later, continuing to work with them, but expanding the practice to focus on small firms around the country. And what I wanted to do was work with small architecture firms, small builder firms, specifically on marketing, specifically on sustainability messaging, because I saw that as a real challenge for folks who are looking to grow that area of their practice. And, you know, from market to market, from community to community, it's different. So I was doing all of that and loving it and growing the portfolio to the point where at one point I was working with folks coast to coast. And at the time, I was kind of spinning up my own practice, you know, my own consultancy, and realized kind of the latitude of working for myself gave me a pretty flexible schedule. So I got to get involved in the community in a way that I never had before. I volunteered with a number of nonprofits. I helped create summer camp programming around architecture. I was on the consulting team for the local building update at the local hands-on museum, which is our children's museum here in Ann Arbor. And after a few years of this, I kind of got to this watershed moment where work was going so well and the community work was going gangbusters, but one of them was going to start coming at the expense of the other.
Right.
And I had to decide like which path I wanted to choose. And I love Ann Arbor. I have since the moment I stepped foot here. And so I decided that I wanted to focus on community conversations around architecture and the built environment. So I spent some time throwing around ideas, talking to potential community partners, potential funders, things like that about the idea. And eventually what emerged from that was Building Matters Ann Arbor. And now we're in our second year of programming. We reached almost 1,000 people in our first year. We had 24 sponsors and cross-promotional partners. I could go on and on and on, but it feels like this is right place, right idea, right time for sure.
All right. I have a bunch of questions.
All right. Let's do it.
First of all, you said you only applied to schools where there was snow.
Did
you grow up in Georgia?
I did.
So
yes.
You just wanted out of the South and you wanted to go somewhere where it was cold and snowy.
I am done with being hot forever.
All right. And so that answered my first question. And then, what was it when you got to Ann Arbor and mm-hmm. you clearly are passionate about Ann Arbor and you love Ann Arbor. And I've met other people who are from Ann Arbor or have gone to school at University of Michigan, and they too are all in, right? People who go to University of Michigan are crazy people. They are probably the most passionate people I've ever met about their school.
Yep. Yep.
I have good friends from UM. And so what is it? What is it about Ann Arbor that you and all the other people who love Ann Arbor so much, what is it about Ann Arbor? I've never been there. What is it that you fell in love with the minute you stepped on the ground?
Well, I'm going to give two answers to that question. One is before I got here and one is after. So part of the criteria that I used to assess which cities I wanted to move to and therefore which schools I wanted to apply to, the city had to have a municipal recycling program. It had to be able to support a car-free lifestyle because I didn't want to move with a car. I had a 1-million-year-old Dodge Dakota truck and I was determined not to hang on to it. And it needed to have a queer-friendly community. And so those three things together, you know, really kind of clarified where I was going to live. Ann Arbor had all those three, you know, in spades. And then when I got here, you know, I was able to live in terms of sustainability and the community that I wanted. That I had like boots on the ground the minute that I got here. What I found was a community that was so welcoming and so opinionated that I just fell in love immediately. And to ground that a little bit, I grew up in Atlanta, in suburban Atlanta. And the suburb that I grew up in, there was just really a remoteness to the community, kind of compounded by the fact that I didn't go to school locally. I was bused to a different, still public school, but bused to a different district. And so the feeling of community and building community was not a natural one where I lived. And so there was a real sense of disconnect. We didn't go to church in our neighborhood. I think we grocery shopped in our neighborhood. Nothing was walkable, you know, and so that was really challenging. In Ann Arbor, everything's piled on top of one another and everybody has 10 opinions about any one given thing. And the messiness and the noise, like the opinion noise of that is just very comforting for me.
Yeah, because that was very interesting that you used the word opinionated. That people were opinionated.
Oh yeah. Oh yeah.
And so everybody.
And what I mean by that is that people care passionately about where they live, and that wasn't necessarily my experience in the community where I grew up. So the fact that they care is just it's music to my ears.
Yeah, I moved from New York, Westchester County, New York, about 40 minutes north of New York City, to Charlotte, the Charlotte, North Carolina region, just about half hour south of Charlotte, the city, in a town called Waxhaw. And I am exactly where you said you were. This is one big gated community after another, and there's no sense of a community here.
Right.
You know, you can find it if you go look for it. You know, there's the old town of Waxhaw is still there. It was built in the 1800s. You know, that's there. When you go there, you feel very welcomed and grounded in a place. Where I live now, and we're here because of family, and I love it. I love North Carolina, and I love Charlotte. But where I was in just north of New York City, there was community, and there was history. There's lots of history, and there's very little history where I am. And so I can understand that. I can understand that move from Atlanta to Ann Arbor when Ann Arbor has that sort of that vibrancy and the word opinionated is very interesting that they're passionate about their place, right?
Yes.
They love where they live, that it's not just a place that they're living. They love where they live. It's part of who they are. It's part of their identity.
Yep. And I would argue that's true for anyone, right? Like where we are is an important part of who we are. And as architects, the folks who are architects and urban planners, people who are trained have a great language for that. People who aren't don't. You know, we're really not brought up as kids, as students, you know, in mainstream culture. We don't have a language of place and space. And I think that's one of the poverties of our public discourse is that we don't know to talk about our where, which means this really important part of our identity goes unspoken or misspoken. We miscommunicate a lot.
Yeah. So tell me about Building Matters Ann Arbor and what was the seed of that? What was the origin of that?
I think it started 10 years ago when I moved to Ann Arbor and I looked for this. I wanted a local organization that spoke to the built environment. As I mentioned, I came from German linguistics and as soon as I started my undergraduate degree, I started my graduate degree. And I had no language for architecture and a lot of imposter syndrome coming into, you know, this really amazing like highbrow program. And so I looked for, you know, a group that I could talk to, maybe a local library of architecture or something like that, and didn't find it. I did find the local AIA chapter. I did find the school has an architecture library. So there were resources like that, but it felt disconnected in terms of if I wanted to explore local architecture, not academic architecture or local history, then there wasn't a resource for that. So missing that wasn't a reason to make it. Until a few years ago, when I realized that people actually kind of are hungry for the same thing that I am, which is a way to talk about place, a way to talk about community in a way that's meaningful and feels connected, and in a way that matters. And so that's where, you know, the nonprofit participation came out of partnering with organizations like Community Action Network of Ann Arbor. As I mentioned, the Hands-On Museum, the Ecology Center, I led a series of workshops, portentously called the Building Matters Workshops a few years ago. And I just saw an increasing hunger for this conversation from other people. It was a leap from pivoting from, you know, community conversation to actual organization, but there's precedent for this, right? Like there are architecture organizations all over the country. Ann Arbor is an outlier in that geographically and population-wise, we're smaller than most places that have an architecture organization. So this is a bit of an experiment to see if we can make it work. But Ann Arbor is so culturally rich and culturally intensive in that way, in part because of the university, in part because of our proximity to Detroit, which itself itself is so culturally rich, that it feels like this is possible and sustainable.
What's the specific mission of Building Matters Ann Arbor? I mean, not word for word, but what's your goal? What's the end goal?
The end goal is a community of people that are literate about architecture, urban planning, the built environment. We'd like to do that through discovery, through exploration, through education, through creating a platform for advocacy. You know, as I mentioned, we are a community of opinionated folks, and being able to channel that energy into action is important. But in the end, if we can just have a community of people who are literate about place, we will have done our job.
And so you want to give them a language on how to speak about architecture. And so how do you do that? Is it with programs? And you said that you do workshops and you've done exhibits. And so is that how you're doing it? Is sort of just getting out there and having that conversation, giving it a place to have that conversation?
Yeah, I mean, we're still working on our long-term goal. As I mentioned, we're just in year two, and in a couple of months, we'll be working on our first strategic plan to take us through year five. So in the first couple of years, we've really focused on two areas of programming. One is partner programming, right? So folks that are already running, you know, robust organizations, but that are looking for new programs and materials to bring their audiences. For example, we're working with a couple of classes in the local public school system. We partnered with the local 2030 district last year on a benchmarking project. There's a number of different partner programs. We did Parking Day in conjunction with our local art center last year, which is Tactical Urbanism Day. Really, really fun, led by a local architecture and fabrication firm called Synecdoche Design, which is they themselves are doing really exciting things. So there's the partner programming aspect of it. And then there's our architecture tours. So we're in the process of putting together a number of stories addressing different areas around town, different areas of interest that help tell the story of history and context. So in a way, we're not explicitly teaching the language, we're just kind of opening the door to people understanding more about the place that they live that helps them understand a little bit more about how we got to be who and what we are today.
And what's the benefit of doing that? Why have an entire organization to teach the public this language? Why is it important that they do know the language?
Because I would argue that Ann Arbor is getting a lot of things right, but we're also not getting quite enough right, and we're not doing it fast enough. So if you are earnest about solving climate issues, a lot of the ways that you address that is on the ground locally. If you are earnest at addressing differences in equity and opportunity, then a lot of that is on the ground municipally. But because architecture and planning and really everything to do with the built environment is so complicated conceptually and so complicated on the policy side, if we're going to make effective change, it can't be, we can't just wait for, you know, five or six people who know what they're talking about to save us. We need a whole community groundswell of people who know how to advocate for themselves when it comes to environmentalism, when it comes to sustainability, both environmental and financial, who knows how to advocate for equity. So that's what we want to be, is a platform for that language and then that advocacy, not telling people how to think or what to do, but giving them context and then giving them resources to be able to advocate for themselves.
Right. So all our cities and towns are growing, right? They're constantly.
Well, many of them are. Yes.
Right.
Some are not.
Exactly. That's correct. So, but that it happens through development and redevelopment, right? And that's they take some things away and rebuild other things, and that's happening whether we're involved or not. Right.
Correct.
Whether our
communities are changing, whether or not they're growing, all communities are changing,
right,
for sure.
Exactly. Thank you for that correction. But that's right. So they're changing. And so there are people and companies and organizations that are all in on that and for different reasons. Mm-hmm. And without the community understanding that language and understanding the effects of that development and redevelopment, the long term effects, the immediate effects, and not just a NIMBY response, not in my backyard, you know, not just that, because a lot of people just say no development, right? Just shut it down. Mm-hmm. I don't want any change. I like it just the way it is, even if it could be better. And so without having that community education, that development will happen however the people who are in power decide it will happen.
Yes. Right?
Without any influence of the people who live there.
Yep, absolutely.
And so it's an incredibly important organization that you've created, that this is something that really should be in every city and town.
Building matters everywhere, so for sure.
Yeah, and it's not necessarily sort of like the planning board or a group of people who are just sort of go to all the planning meetings and have their opinion. It's about the whole community sort of embracing their community and having a part of what happens. So like a family in their home, right? Mm-hmm. That when something's happening with the home, typically the whole family sort of involved in those decisions and how it's going to be changed and where you're going to move and what's going to happen.
All true. And part of why we wanted to form an organization, and when I say me, I mean our early supporters, our board, the whole Building Matters Ann Arbor community, which comprises so many, you know, volunteers and contributors in so many different ways. Part of the reason that we wanted to form an organization as opposed to, you know, just continuing to be, you know, just running around doing and saying stuff, is that if we were going to effectively reach the community, you know, and you can't say everyone, because in part because that's an impossible ideal,
right,
and in part because Ann Arbor is a transitory town, right? Like, we're a university town. We have academic fellows moving through all the time, students moving through all the time, as well as natural ebb and flow of population with respect to jobs and schools. So we can't reach everyone, but we can be available to anyone, but we need to have that durability and the consistency of what we're bringing forward in order to be able to reach folks consistently. And that's really where the organization was born out of, was if we want to see generational change, and our vision is a 100-year vision, then we need to be committed with our resources, with our time, with our people for the long haul.
We will return to our conversation after this quick break to say thank you to our platform sponsors, RCAT, FreshBooks, and Gusto. If you work with specifications in your firm, you probably have come across outdated manufacturer specs with confusing notes, products that no longer exist, or even maybe even companies that no longer exist. Maybe you even pay for specifications. Stop. Stop right now. There's a better way to find manufacturer specifications for your project documentation. RCAT. RCAT.com. RCAT is the number one most used website for finding building product information and has a free library of over 1,400 up-to-date accurate specifications written by FCSI, CCS, and AIA professionals based on manufacturers' data. Use RCAT's powerful search engine to find the right specifications for your project and quickly download them in multiple formats for free. That's right, RCAT is completely free. You don't even need to register. Just go to RCAT.com. That's ARCAT.com. RCAT.com, and start building better content today. Do you remember when you started your architecture firm? Well, maybe you're in the middle of that right now. Maybe you are in the middle of launching your architecture firm. It's not easy, is it? It takes lots of late nights, early mornings, and maybe even the occasional all-nighter. Well, we are crazy busy, so why not make things a little bit easier? Well, our friends at FreshBooks have the solution. FreshBooks invoicing and accounting software is designed specifically for small business owners like us. It's simple, intuitive, and keeps you way more organized than a dusty shoebox filled with crumpled receipts. Create and send professional-looking invoices in 30 seconds, and then get them paid 2 times faster with automated online payments. File expenses even quicker and keep them perfectly organized for tax time. Yep, tax time's coming up. And the best part, FreshBooks grows alongside your business, so you'll always have the tools that you need when you need them, without ever having to learn the ins and the outs of accounting. Join the 24 million people who've used FreshBooks. Try it for free. Free for 30 days, no catch, no credit card. Visit entrearchitect.com/FreshBooks. entrearchitect.com/FreshBooks. And enter Entree Architect in the How Did You Hear About Us section. To get started, visit entrearchitect.com/FreshBooks. What do you think of when you hear the words payroll and benefits? Payroll and benefits. Does that make your skin crawl? Does it make your spine tingle? Payroll and benefits are hard. It's okay. It's hard, especially when you're a small business like us. You don't have time to be an expert in things like taxes and regulations, a couple of more words that might make your skin crawl. And old school payroll providers just aren't built for the way that we're working today. Gusto is making payroll, benefits, and HR easy for small businesses. Modern technology does all the heavy lifting, so it's easy to get things right. You no longer have to be a big company to get great technology, great benefits, and great service for your team. To help support the show, the Entree Architect podcast, Gusto is offering our listeners an exclusive deal. Sign up today and you'll get 3 months free once you run your first payroll. Just go to entrearchitect.com/gusto to claim your free 3 months of payroll processing. That's entrearchitect.com/gusto for 3 months free. Arcat, FreshBooks, and Gusto. Please visit our platform sponsors today and thank them for supporting you, the Entree Architect community. Are there specific events or specific changes that are happening now in Ann Arbor that you are specifically targeting that you could use as an example of what you're doing?
I would love to see our community get better at housing. I do a lot of work on this personally, politically, but with respect to building matters, I would love to see us be a good partner in helping make Ann Arbor more affordable and more accessible. We have a not great history of that. Recently, we were listed by Richard Florida as the eighth most segregated community in the economically segregated community in the United States. Within Michigan, I'd need to look at the statistics, but I think we're 80th out of 83 counties in terms of economic mobility. So who you are when you move here is who you're going to be. And that's not really okay if we're talking about equity. And a lot of that has to do with housing. A lot of that a municipality, that a local community control is housing. So I'm interested in folks getting a better understanding of what the challenges are, you know, what we have and what we don't have, what we need and what we don't need, what our tools are and what's not available to us, what needles we can change and what we can't. Because if we're going to kind of make a dent in those kind of grim statistics for what is a great community, but not equally great for everyone, and not equally accessible to everyone, if we're going to move the needle, we're going to need a lot of help. And Building Matters, I would love for us to be a partner in that work.
And housing is a perfect example of the NIMBY world, right? And whenever affordable housing starts being discussed in areas that need affordable housing, but it's, you know, that idea of what affordable housing is to people instantly says, I don't want that. You know, I want that to happen because I feel that it's important, but I don't want it in my backyard. Right.
And so I get that I'm the founder of Ann Arbor YIMBY and I have a lot of feelings around, you know, YIMBY NIMBY words, but I also want to push back and say that it's a lot more nuanced than that. Folks care about their community, you know, and when they see prospective changes come up, what they're reading is, you know, how is this going to change traffic? I'm already seeing flooding in my community. Isn't new development going to make that worse? If we're truly working on the environment, do we really need more people living here? So I really kind of want to push back on the NIMBY narrative as say I default to saying no, because saying no is my response to change. I'm also going to expand. So I live in a university town, like every paragraph is 27 parts. I'll just apologize for that now. But I discovered something new recently that really kind of opened my eyes and got me excited. When it comes to people and how they talk about and think about and feel about development and change, I had thought that it was human nature, that this reticence towards change was just a part of our DNA. Mm-hmm. It's not. That's really exciting. It's actually, it's an inheritance of ours from Victorian culture. So technology was speeding up so fast, literally, with trains, with electrification in homes and businesses. And this change was genuinely dangerous, you know, like people were getting mauled in really gruesome ways by intercity transit.
Yeah.
Electrification and indoor plumbing were not necessarily safe in the early days. And so people had a very natural and I think species ensuring response to this, saying, I'm not going to take change necessarily as a good thing, which from the industrial age up to then, you know, when our social and technological change had been accelerating, people had kind of been embracing change as mostly an unadulterated good. Like, yes, things are getting better. I can afford, you know, better washing materials in my house. The cities are getting larger and providing better amenities. There was an embrace of change until it got dangerous. So I think part of what we're seeing now is kind of this, at this point, a little bit stale 125-year-old attitude towards accelerating change. So the reason that I got excited about it is that something that's encoded in our DNA, if this were a lizard brain thing, it would be much harder to move. Mm-hmm. But it's not. This is just a habit. So if we can shift the habit, I think we can get to better nuance of not should there be housing or should there not be housing, but how will housing impact traffic? One might say that having more housing closer to jobs would actually really alleviate the traffic problems that we're having around here, but that's not a jump that's natural for people to make. So if we could put the brakes on the no, mm-hmm. and kind of expand the space for let's explore this idea, I think we can get to more nuanced discussions of development.
Yeah, I love that. Thank you.
Yeah, for sure.
100% agree. The one of the members in our community, it was the one that connected Brian Burkett of Aspire Architecture was the one that connected us.
Shout out to Brian.
Brian's a member of the Entree Architects community on Facebook, a very active Facebook group. And we talk about all kinds of things, and we were talking about something, and actually he emailed me.
He was my mentor in grad school too.
Oh yeah. Yeah. And he was listening to one of our recent podcasts, and he emailed me just unsolicitedly and said, you need to talk to Jessica. And so that's how this happened. But in his email, it was very interesting that he used a very specific term, that you fight for the public understanding of what good architecture brings to people. I love that sentence.
Oh my gosh, I'm putting that on the business card. That's so great.
That's what he said about you. That's and I put it in my notes because I wanted to point it out. Fighting for a public understanding of what good architecture brings to people.
Yes.
Because I think inherently, instinctively, we love architecture. Right? There's very mm-hmm. few people who, mm-hmm. when you hear the word architecture, not development, not buildings, architecture. When you hear the mm-hmm. word architecture and what architecture is, mm-hmm. Most people embrace it. Most people say, oh, I love architecture, mm-hmm. right? I love architecture. Mm-hmm. I wanted to be an architect, right?
Yes, yes, yes.
Right? And so it's most of us love that, right? So if you can have that conversation around how architecture affects us in good mm-hmm. ways and bad ways, mm-hmm. And you can build a vocabulary around that, and people understand why they inherently love architecture, or mm-hmm. good architecture, that can then be, you know, extended into this bigger conversation about how our cities and towns change.
You know, it absolutely can, and I'll push that one step further and say that people are excited about architecture and simultaneously really afraid to talk about it. So when it comes to things that all of us experience in our everyday lives, say something like food or podcasts, you know, or a book or something like that, we feel okay saying, I like this and this is why, or I don't like this and this is why. When it comes to buildings and design, people are much more tentative, right? Like they see a building and they have this really visceral response right away, like, oh, I love that building, or, oh, that building kind of unsettles me. Mm-hmm. And that's as far as it goes. And we're like, well, I'm no architect, so I don't want to say. Well, I mean, place is really kind of the one thing that all of us have in common is we all occupy a place all the time. And so not having that language, but even more having that fear of talking about it is doing none of us a service. So part of what we want to do is just break the architecture fear of, mm-hmm. you know, let's talk about what you like and what you don't like. Is it clunky? Is it color? Is it material? Do you feel like that should be metal where it's brick? Like, you know, you don't need to be an expert to have a vocabulary. But there is that fear right now, and I'd love to see that go away.
Yeah, 100%. And is that what the tours that you're doing? Is that sort of what you're doing when you're walking through these areas of the city, sort of explaining why they're feeling the way they're feeling?
It's never an explanation. Again, we don't come at this mm-hmm. with an agenda. We're telling stories from history. But we're doing it in a really particular way. We don't necessarily hire experts from the building industry professions. We did have one realtor last year, but other than that, like, we don't require a background in history or architecture. When we look for tour guides, what we look for are experienced storytellers. And we train on content because the idea is that anybody can tell a good architecture story as long as you have the right information. Mm-hmm. And I think there's something about And I love architects, and I've been a groupie of y'all for a long time, but like there's architects and there's normal people, right? So there's something about normal people leading architecture tours that makes them even more accessible to the people who take them.
Yes. And I think a lot of architects are nodding their head right now. Yeah.
Yes.
We completely understand that.
Yes. Yes. I say that with all love and gratitude that you exist.
Yeah. You said earlier that this is a 100-year mission.
Yes.
So what do you hope that in Ann Arbor specifically, what do you hope Ann Arbor will look like and be? What's the end result? 100 years from now, how has Building Matters Ann Arbor affected change in Ann Arbor 100 years from now?
I would love to see Ann Arbor. I'm going to speak to the city and not to the organization, because how we participate in that, the story is still yet to be written.
Mm-hmm.
I would love to see Ann Arbor a national leader for small cities in sustainability, radical sustainability, not incremental, for equity, true equity, again, not incremental, and not just a leader in static statistics, but a leader in demonstrating what positive community growth and transformation looks like. You know, I pushed back earlier on your statement that all communities are growing, noting that not necessarily, but all of them are transforming. It's likely that Ann Arbor will continue to grow as a university town, as a satellite to a successful and fantastic city like Detroit. We're really a magnet for more and more people. We have a growing tech and professional services industry here. We've added something like, aside from the university, something like 3,000 jobs in a city of 120,000 people in the last 10 years. That's not insignificant, and it's likely to accelerate as these various sectors grow. So I would love for our community to be a template for what positive, healthy growth can look like. One of my griefs is that our conversation, our public conversation around development, is one of the most toxic and abusive ones that we have. The minute that you start talking about development, it's real easy to get into anger, into accusations, into abuse. And we kind of consider this the status quo of what it means to talk about development. I don't think that has to be the case. I really don't. And so I would love Ann Arbor for Ann Arbor to be a template and a prototype for shifting that conversation into one that much better serves, especially the folks for whom our city is currently not working very well.
So in 100 years, and I'm walking through Ann Arbor, can you sort of, if Building Matters Ann Arbor has been 100% successful in their mission 100 years from now, what does it actually look like? Like, what am I seeing? What am I feeling? How is it actually changed in a way that you've succeeded with your mission?
You are in one of our small mini downtowns that is not actually downtown. You only had to walk a few minutes from your house, which you are able to afford without too much pain, to your favorite local coffee shop, to a place where you are able to buy food, to a place where your kids or your family or your dog can rest and enjoy the outdoors, because it is not brutally hot and humid here. I would just like to say that again, Georgia. You will always get that wrong. So it's comfortable, it's accessible, and you don't have to be downtown to be in a place that's walkable, and convenient and connected. But if you'd like to get to another part of town, it's really easy to pop on the light rail connector that doesn't exist yet, but will in 100 years, and pop over to the brewery where your friends are meeting, and be able to have a good time there.
That's a beautiful vision. I'm looking forward to that. And I won't be around in 100 years, but hopefully my kids will go and visit and explore. And what I'm hoping is that other cities and other towns will be inspired by what you're doing at Building Matters Ann Arbor. Are you planning to expand it beyond Ann Arbor?
That's a great question, and I think that will be one of the questions that we pose to ourselves in our upcoming strategic planning initiatives. I will say that there's room for Building Matters everywhere. Mm-hmm. You know, as I said, this organization type is a little bit of an experiment in terms of, you know, can a tours organization exist in a city this size? And our argument is yes. But these conversations are happening everywhere. There is always a place to dip in and to contribute. And so if you believe, like I do, and if you're listening to Mark, you do, that building matters, then there is absolutely opportunities no matter where you are.
If somebody wanted to get involved in specifically your organization, how would they do that?
First thing, reach out to email info@buildingmattersannarbor.org. I would love to talk to anyone and everyone who is considering something like this in their community. But I would also recommend, you know, as I mentioned a little bit ago, the first place that I took this when I started having the idea in earnest was out to the community in conversation. I talked to other executive directors of nonprofits. I talked to folks in our local government. I talked to people in the tech community, as I mentioned, and at the university, and kind of got through those conversations. I wasn't asking any specific question, but just, you know, what do you see as the opportunity? What's the missed opportunity for our community? And it typically came down to a disconnect between information and action. And so Building Matters Ann Arbor is here to serve as that kind of connector between information and action, which is really about people and programs. That could look different in other communities, but you won't know until you talk to people. So it's really about establishing relationships and the dialogue first.
Yeah, fantastic. What was the email again? If somebody who was inspired by what you're talking about wants to do it in their own community, how do they reach out to you?
Please, please, please reach out. We'd love to talk to you. It's info@buildingmattersannarbor.org.
All right, great. Before we wrap up, Jessica, what is one thing a small firm architect can do today to build a better business for tomorrow?
You know, I love that you asking this because this is what I did for a few years before I pivoted into Building Matters. And I'll recommend actually what I just said, which is reach out to a community partner. I guarantee that you, if you are a professional, there is a local nonprofit or local government department that could absolutely benefit from what you have to say, whether it has pertains particularly to your practice or something a little bit sideways to it. But reach out to your local bookstore, your local museum, your local kids organization, and just see what the opportunities are. I guarantee they'll be delighted to hear from you.
Her name is Jessica Leetaw, like seesaw.
Like seesaw.
It's spelled out if you're Googling her, because I'm sure everybody's going to want to find out more about Jessica. It's L-E-T-A-W, L-E-T-A-W, Leetaw. The website is Building Matters with an S, buildingmattersannarbor.org. We'll have links to everything on the show notes, so you can just go to the show notes for this episode, and we'll have links to all of this. On Facebook, she's available at Building Matters A2, as in two A's, Ann Arbor, A-Ann Arbor, so A2, the number two. So Building Matters, the letter A, the number two. And on LinkedIn, Jessica Leetaw. So Jessica, you are incredibly inspiring.
Oh, Mark, thank you. Thank you so much.
You're
what a
welcome.
Great way to start the day. And thank you so much for having me. This has been really fun.
You're very welcome. I hope that other people who are listening are inspired to take action in their own communities, because I love the approach that you're taking, that this is not about, you know, shutting down the developers or, and, you know, building up the developers. This is about learning about architecture and educating mm-hmm. our public so they can be better citizens of their communities and be involved yep. in the change that's happening in their communities.
Yep.
And I embrace that, and I encourage others to do the same. And so I thank you for being a leader in our communities, specifically in Ann Arbor, but being a leader now also expanding it beyond Ann Arbor, just as an example of what something, you know, architects or anybody who is interested in their communities can do. So Jessica, this has been a fantastic conversation. I appreciate you. I appreciate what you're doing. And I thank you for joining me here at Entree Architect Podcast.
Thanks a lot.
You've been listening to episode 310. If you would like to access the show notes or share a link for this episode with a friend, the link is entrearchitect.com/episode310. Please do share that link, entrearchitect.com/episode310. I know I say that every episode, and we're growing because you're sharing. So please, if you haven't shared this episode or any other episodes, now's your opportunity. entrearchitect.com/episode310. Type it into your email and send it to a friend right now. I would appreciate that, because that's how we're growing and getting the word out about Entree Architect and what we're doing here. Hey, and if you've just recently launched your small firm. Is that you? Did you just recently start a small firm, or you're planning to launch within the next 12 months? Then you, my friend, are a startup architect. And congratulations, because that is a huge step. I know that it takes a lot of courage to take that leap. And those of you who've done this know how difficult it is to make that leap to start a new architecture firm. So we here at Entree Architect wanted to make it a little bit easier for you startup architects. We have something very special to help you get launched and put you on the right track for a successful firm far into the future. It's called the Entree Architect Startup Mastermind, and it's not just another peer group. This is our 14th mastermind group here at Entree Architect. We have 13 other mastermind groups. This mastermind group is special, the Startup Mastermind. Not only will you become a member of a professional peer group exclusive and dedicated to startup architects, you will have access to our full membership of experienced architects inside the member forum. You'll be able to ask questions and they'll answer them. They're ready to help you. And we'll have special guests and support just for you for your group. Our goal is to get you launched with success so that you may become the best architect you can be and build a stronger profession and better serve the world. That's how it works. Stronger businesses, better profession, better serve the world. That's how it works. And as a very special bonus, only for the Entree Architect Startup Mastermind, we put together the Entree Architect Startup Launch Kit. It's only for this group, and it's only for the 12 members who join the Entree Architect Startup Mastermind. It's worth more than $1,400, and it's free to the 12 members who join the Entree Architect Startup Mastermind. Ready to learn more? Visit entrearchitect.com/startup. Everything's there for you to understand what's happening. Not a startup architect? That's okay. That's most of you. Help me spread the word. Share that link with a friend. entrearchitect.com/startup. Hope to see you, the startup architects, in that group. Love, learn, share what you know. Thanks for listening. You have a great week.
From historic homes to modern architecture, brick is one of the most popular building materials around the world.
How to allow the house to bridge the gap between the history of the site, the approachability of this kind of architecture in this kind of neighborhood, and the sort of nostalgia of materiality for the client's past, right? And brick really started to provide an answer for that.
Hi, I'm Doug Pat, and this is Design Vault. There aren't many materials that easily blend with any style and context, but brick does just that. I've seen some extraordinary work with brick, so when Glengarry approached me about hosting this podcast, I couldn't say no.
Typically, Tudor-style houses from outside are just stunningly gorgeous piece of structure, and when you go in, it's just sad.
Yeah.
Dark. And that is not going to happen with my approach to design.
I speak with industry leaders and share inspiring stories behind their work and ingenious design.
You'll see brick that's fashioned into basket weave patterns, sawtooth patterns, what's known in England as diapering.
Doesn't sound like you knew them per se, right? They found you through relationships that you had with other.
Well, wait, Doug, there's more.
Okay. We'll go behind the scenes to understand process and even the inspiration that sparked the design.
You know, I think we were inspired by all the factory buildings in Dumbo. I mean, that is the kind of period of significance, that early American factory building.
Design Vault by Glengarry. Visit glengarry.com/design-vault or search for Design Vault wherever you get your podcasts and subscribe now to stretch your imagination.
Attention architects and creative minds, get ready to supercharge your brand with Build Your Brand, the podcast that's unlocking the secrets of branding success for creatives. Hey there, it's Mark Arlepage, founder of Entree Architect, and I'm inviting you to join my friend, architect marketing expert, Jeff Eccles at Build Your Brand podcast, where he explores the captivating stories of the world's top brands and transforms their lessons into powerful moves for small firm architects and creatives like you. In season one, Jeff shares the thrilling tale of Southwest Airlines, where he dissects their journey to the summit and distills it into strategies tailor-made for you.
It's important to keep in mind that companies like Southwest compete in the real world, just like you, and face real-world challenges, just like you. You might be surprised at how similar those challenges are to the struggles that you grapple with on a day-to-day basis.
Don't miss out on your blueprint for success. Subscribe, tune in, and let's build your brand together.
You may have noticed that the very best brands in the world are also known for having somewhat unique corporate cultures. That's often the glue that holds everything together when they encounter those rough spots.
We don't do it because it inconveniences the passengers to whom we are primarily dedicated, the short-haul frequent flyer.
Follow the link in the show notes to subscribe to Build Your Brand today. Remember, no matter the size, the journey's the same. Your brand's journey to the top starts here.